Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
You're listening to Over the Influence. I'm your host, Arielle Lori. I'll be talking to movers and shakers in the world of wellness and beyond, and people who have had their own interesting journey, whether it be physical, mental, spiritual, or professional. Thanks for joining. Let's get into it. Happy Wednesday, or whatever day it is that you're listening to this episode. I guess it could be any day of the week, so happy that day. Disregard. Today, I'm talking to Rob Yang, who is my nutritionist, and if you follow me on Instagram, you might know that Rob and I have been on a gut healing mission for the past almost year and a half, and it's night and day from when we started. I think back or look back on old photos from before he and I started working together, and it's really shocking to me now to see the extreme bloating and to remember the really acute digestive issues that I was suffering from, because that was my norm back then, so it didn't really faze me. But now that I don't really experience that anymore, I have a little perspective, and I'm just so grateful for Rob's guidance. So I'm excited to share him with you. He's so knowledgeable, and there's so much ground to cover. I think I need to have him back periodically to the podcast and pick a topic and delve really deep, but we definitely covered a lot in this interview as well. So just a technical note, Rob and I recorded this episode back in January when I had no clue what I was doing. I still kind of don't, but I'm winging it. But I didn't have the software back then that I have now, so the sound quality is a little bit different. And you might hear Harvey in the background. So just wanted to put that out there. So a little bit about Rob. He has a master's in human nutrition and is a certified nutritionist. He is a strength and conditioning specialist, a Czech level 4 practitioner, and an advisory board member with the Titleist Performance Institute. He specializes in nutrition, sports performance, and lifestyle coaching. His integrative and individualized programs have helped athletes and individuals improve performance, prevent injuries, and improve health and vitality. Okay, so welcome, Rob Yang, to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it's only natural that I would have you as my first guest because we've been working together for over a year now, and you've just been so immensely helpful to me on my personal journey. So I'm really happy to get to share you with everybody.
Great. I'm excited to share and try to help people as much as I can.
Yeah. So why don't you just give everyone a quick intro about your background and how you got into the field that you're in now.
Sure. So my background, I'm in high school, I was involved in a lot of different sports. So I just for personal gain, I was always interested in trying to increase my performance for sports and getting stronger for powerlifting and then eventually bodybuilding and all these different sports. And so the nutrition side of it was always intriguing. And so I was always trying to learn something. And so, I mean, at the period of time, the only education were magazines. And then as I went to school, I wanted to study nutrition. And so once I graduated from school, I got my license to be a nutritionist. And at the time, I was still personal training people. And I got my, that's what we call CSCS, a Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist. So I was working in that capacity on both sides. I tell people it depends on kind of what hat I'm wearing. Sometimes I'm wearing the strength coach hat, and sometimes I'm, you know, wearing just the nutrition hat. And so it just evolved and changed. And so as I wanted to become more educated after going to university, that's where I was really just fascinated with functional medicine. And so people will say it's alternative medicine or whatever that is, but basically looking at how each system of the body is so interactive with each other and looking at digestion and how that impacts your hormones and how your hormones can affect, obviously, you know, other parts of your physiology and the detox pathways. And so I just continued to educate myself in that capacity. And so, right, you know, right now my practice, sometimes I'm wearing the strength coach hat, sometimes I'm wearing the nutrition hat, and then the other times I'm wearing both hats, depending on who I'm working with.
Right.
So for me, you know, as a practitioner, it's always interesting. I always work with a lot of different types of people, athletes, people with a lot of issues. And so for me, that's exciting. And I'm always learning on a daily basis.
It's always interesting to me when a more natural, holistic approach to our health, so functional medicine or integrative medicine, is deemed alternative. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it just seems like that should be our primary modality of treatment rather than like maybe a more westernized approach where often we just are treating symptoms with drugs. And don't get me wrong, my dad's a doctor. I believe in Western medicine. Everything has a time and a place. Maybe I'm just cynical from my own experiences, but I guess I wish that a more holistic approach was the norm.
You know, I think as with any industry, you know, you get focused on a pathway. And so it's nothing wrong with it in terms of the medical community, but it, you know, there's a specialist for every single thing, you know, from, you know, hormonal endocrinologist to immunologist, to all these, you know, gastroenterologists, where, you know, the gastrointestinal tract affects the immune system and affects the hormones. So you can't separate those, especially when we're talking about a lot of the chronic problems that people are seeing these days and experiencing in this day and age.
Yeah, it's all interconnected. I definitely want to talk about that, but I'm curious, since you were in this field before it was more mainstream like it is now, what was the health and especially the nutrition component? What was that like then? Because we see, you know, always there are different trends and diets, and I'm curious what it was like when you first got into the business.
Yeah, I think with I think I always say that the nutritional field is kind of like fashion. So it goes in cycles, you know.
Right, like everything comes back eventually.
Yeah, everything comes back. I think, you know, like Bell Bottoms will come back, or, you know, overall.
Oh yeah, they're back.
Yeah, you know, so. And I think that's so true with nutrition as well, because right now, you know, if you, you know, I think that probably the most often searched or Googled diet is the keto diet, right? And so, you know, I mean, I played around with the keto diet, you know, in the early 90s. And, you know, and even then it was, you know, it's been around for years before that. So You know, it definitely, obviously, and back in those days, usually, I mean, from my perspective, because I was more trying to increase performance or lose body fat or gain muscle, at that period of time, it was, you know, more towards the aesthetics. But, you know, for me and my sort of journey working with people, I realized that a lot of people were having the same issues. You know, they were constipated and they were having diarrhea and they didn't know what to do, or, you know, they were having problems sleeping, or they were just fatigued all the time. Like, they just couldn't get out of bed, and they forced themselves to get out of bed, and then, okay, have my coffee, and then I feel kind of normal, and then to be able to, you know, go try to function through the day.
You know, it's interesting because it sounds like you were dealing with what is now kind of the hot topic, which is gut health, right? Mm-hmm. And digestive issues back then, but I don't know, maybe it's just from my perspective, but it seems like gut issues are a lot more prevalent now, maybe, than they were then, or maybe people just weren't talking about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it could be the fact that, you know, there's people are testing more for it. You know, so they're going to their doctor saying, you know, I have these issues going on. So they're getting an endoscopy, or, you know, they're getting more tests done. So that could be part of it, that they're researching it more. So that's happening. But I think, you know, as we go along and things are changing within, you know, lifestyles and what people are eating and everything else, I think there's definitely, I think people are definitely more aware of it. They're realizing that, okay, this should not be normal physiological function. It's really common, but it shouldn't be normal in someone's life. So I think it's a little bit of both.
For people who don't know, why is gut health so important to our overall well-being?
Well, I think a Russian pathologist said it best, Eli Metchnikoff, and he said, death begins in the colon.
I've heard that before, actually.
Yeah. So I've never forgotten that. Once I heard that, I was like, whoa, okay.
That's a bold statement.
Very bold statement. And that was made a long time ago. And I think it definitely has a hand in, you know, in everything in terms of the function of the body. Like I said before, you know, hormones, you know, like, for example, 20% of your thyroid hormone is made in your gut. Mm-hmm. You know, estrogen levels can be dramatically affected by your gut health. So I think, you know, from, you know, from a big picture perspective, you look long term, you know, you have to look at gut health impacting, you know, your quality of life, and then obviously your life expectancy as well. And so I think, you know, we have to look at it from a big picture perspective, but also short-term perspective, you know, and obviously short-term perspective, people are complaining of immediate gas and bloating, and, you know, they're having diarrhea more than usual, that kind of stuff. But then, you know, from the bigger perspective, you know, you do have to look at, you know, bigger diseases that people could possibly get, cancer, obviously. You know, one of the things I noticed is with Parkinson's patients, a lot of high correlation with constipation and Parkinson's, like a lot of
really
are constipated, you know? Mm-hmm. So now the research is starting to gear towards that. Okay, well, how does that impact the brain? And now we know, well, you know, the gut affects the brain. There's a gut brain connection.
Such an important topic, and probably one that deserves its own episode. But you mentioned hormones. Can you talk a little bit about why they're so important, and what do you even mean when you say hormones? I know probably for a lot of people, certainly for me up until a couple of years ago, I only thought of hormones in terms of like reproductive hormones.
Right. And most people think, oh, you're being hormonal, and, you know, they always joke around and say, oh, it's like you're having your menstrual cycle, whichever.
Right. People think of it in the context of like a period, or maybe testosterone or something, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not excluding males. I don't want to leave the boys out of there. You know, like nowadays, obviously it's like, you know, it's PMS, menopause, perimenopause, but for men, you know, you go on any sort of sports talk radio show or whatever, a commercial is, every other commercial is like low T clinic,
right.
Get your testosterone checked. Right.
Yeah.
And so we only think of hormones in the sense of, okay, it's my, for female, it's my estrogen, progesterone during my cycle. For male, it's testosterone or too much estrogen. But when we look at it, you know, in terms of more of a overall approach, then you have to look at the other parts of the hormones. So you have to look at the cortisol levels of your adrenal glands and aldosterone and, you know, norepinephrine, epinephrine, because you can't just be very myopic and say, okay, well, your testosterone is low, so you have to take testosterone, or your estrogen is low, you have to take estrogen. You have to, and that's what I've always tried to do, is ask the question, why? You know, why is your testosterone level low, or why is your estrogen level low, why is your progesterone level low? And so oftentimes we need to factor those into someone's program and figure, okay, why are they low? Because oftentimes if you just give that person the pill, or you give them, you know, shots of testosterone for a male, they might feel better for the short term, but long term they either feel worse or they get other symptoms because of the lack of I guess, or just basically kind of creating a band-aid approach to the issue rather than getting to the root cause of the problem.
What are your thoughts on synthetic hormones?
Obviously, if you look at it, could be more of a, I guess you could say the medical approach in terms of medication, right? So taking, you know, exogenous estrogen, or you could, it's sort of kind of like a gray area when you start to say, okay, we're going to do bioidentical hormones. You know, right. So now we're taking natural, the exact estrogen, progesterone that, you know, is bioidentical to the body's estrogen, progesterone. And then, so, you know, you have that sort of spectrum there. And so in regards to, you know, even if it's the safer way, like the bioidentical hormones, that's, you know, what's touted in even the functional medicine route. From my experience, I would tend to err on the side of caution with that. And the reason being is that, yes, you might get an immediate effect, and so someone feels better when you introduce it. But again, it comes back to, why is it low? Like, why are the levels dysfunctional? And so that's where you need to do some investigative work. And that's, for me, that's my job, is, okay, well, why is it low? And you can't just look at, labs. Like, I'm a big proponent of looking at labs, because you know, if you're not assessing, you're guessing, you know. That was a famous line by a mentor of mine, Paul Check, a long time ago. So you do have to do some assessments and tests, but you also need to look at other factors. So you have to look at lifestyle, you have to look at someone's stress level, sleep, obviously what they eat, what they exercise, because they're all encompassing. And so you do have to look at those factors. So that's why when I consult with someone that's new, it takes an hour for me to consult with them, because I want to hear their history. I want to hear their medical background, because there's lots of little nuggets in there that they tell me to go, okay, that's completely makes sense of why you're at the state of dysfunction at this period of time because of your history.
Yeah, you took a really thorough history with me. It was like an hour. I was not used to that. I was used to seeing somebody for 5 minutes and then getting blood work and being told that I was in the normal range. And as we know, being in the normal range on blood panels isn't necessarily a good thing. Normal doesn't indicate that you're healthy necessarily or thriving.
Yeah, it does bring up a good point in terms of when you look at lab profiles. I mean, perfect example is if you look at someone's thyroid panel with thyroid stimulating hormone, TSH, I mean, the values are so wide ranging. And so someone could technically in the normal range, but they're low normal, you know, and so that may be an issue. You know, vitamin D, 25 hydroxy vitamin D, that's another classic example, because the range is, I think it's between 30 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. And, you know, if you're at 30, they're like, oh, you're normal.
Right.
But, you know, that will be considered low normal. And ideally, you should be probably between 50 to 60, maybe 60 to 70. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's some interpretation in regards to some of those labs. But, you know, I think when, you know, you came to see me, I think what tends to happen is that when you know, you're fairly young, you're a beautiful woman, you're not overweight, you don't look like you're unhealthy, right? Like, you actually look very vital and healthy. So yeah. They look at you, go, why are you here?
Yeah.
Like, what, nothing could be wrong with you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I get a lot of people like this, especially women, you know, they're fairly fit and they're trying to work out and they're doing like all the quote unquote right things, but yet they're still having some of these imbalances. And the doctors go like, no, you're either something's wrong in your head or there's nothing wrong with you. Like, we did the standard blood work or whatever, you know, right. And there's nothing wrong with you. But, you know, I'm not living in your body. Like, you know your body best, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I'm just kind of, I'm a guide. I'm a coach to say, hey, you know, these are the things that I'm seeing from the outside looking in. And these are potential probably red flags that's probably contributing to whatever your complaint is. And so I think that's sort of the biggest gap that I see in regards to especially some of the women that are seeking some of the help, is that, you know, they're looked upon as healthy. And I mean, it reminds me, I mean, I just a couple of weeks ago, one of my clients said, yeah, I went to the GI doc and he said, you eat too healthy. You need to go eat some junk food.
Oh my God.
That was his sort of answer. And I don't know why he gave that answer, but I thought, that doesn't really make sense. You know?
No, not at all.
Yeah. And so,
strange.
But that, I think that's sort of the gap, and that's where I'm trying to educate people and fill them up in that gap. And you know, it can be really tough with digestive issues because there's so many factors involved, and it's not just food or it's not just, stress and all the other things. It could be all five of the things that could be affecting your GI tract. So sometimes right. It can be difficult to find that one, you know, root cause of the problem. It's sometimes it's multifactorial. Oftentimes it's multifactorial.
I get this question all the time on Instagram, and I'm sure you do too, but if somebody thinks that they're having issues with their gut or hormones or whatever it may be, they are feeling off. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should narrow it down to just digestion. What is the right. One thing that, how would you recommend they start trying to figure out what's going on?
I think with digestion, in terms of trying to figure out what's going on, I think the biggest thing is what we could talk about is their stress load. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the most difficult part of trying to help someone and work with them, is that if the particular client's not able to control their stress, then it's very, very difficult to try to get a handle on their digestive issues.
Interesting.
So, and you know, let me clarify what I under, like, the umbrella of stress. So stress, we always think of mental, emotional, right? Like,
yep.
You're breaking up with your boyfriend or a girlfriend, or you're getting a divorce, you're moving into a new house, you're moving to a new state, you know, that kind of stuff. But underneath that, we also have to consider the other components of stress. So it could be physical stress. So, you know, the culture of fitness right now is that you need to go balls to the wall and you need
right.
to kill yourself and you need to, you know, count your macros and you need to go low calorie and all those things. Well, that in itself could be a massive stress to the system.
Yes.
Especially when you take into account that this particular person is, you know, in a job where they're working 78 hours a week, they're only sleeping 5.5-6 hours a night, maybe 6.5 hours a night. And then they have, you know, the stress dynamics at work. So you know what I mean? Like it could be like physical, like too much exercise for someone, or right. It could be they're not eating enough food. You know, they're eating good quality food, but they're not eating enough. So yeah, I mean, that was a really like tough question to answer because I say stress and I'm giving you all these other factors. And so that's where I would say, you know, it's sort of a huge kind of loaded question. But saying that, you know, I would say, from, let's say just a food perspective, like make sure that, you know, the basic foundational stuff is, you know, drink half your body ounces of water a day. Like you have to do that. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts around that. You got to start doing that. Otherwise you're just not giving the body what it needs on a daily basis. And that right. That in itself can be a stressor to the system. So you want to rule that out. And then from a food perspective, you know, just really try to control blood sugar, because that's really one of the keys towards de-stressing your system and allowing your system to handle stress. Because stress isn't bad. It's just if the stress is too much for your system, then it's a bad thing.
And diets or certain lifestyle tools, I'll call them, like intermittent fasting, for one, can be major stressors to our systems too. And a lot of times we don't even realize it.
Obviously, that's probably one of the other big, I guess, diet trends or plans that are out there is to do intermittent fasting with IF. And so I always tell people it's a tool, but you have to know how to use a tool properly. So you can't think of everything as a nail and you're just going to use a hammer. I mean, that tends to be kind of the way it is sometimes. And so you have to definitely be careful with something like intermittent fasting, especially when in the context of someone that may have especially issues with energy as well as anxiety and depression. I find that's probably not a good option because their blood sugar is probably unstable to begin with. And so when you get someone in that state and low cortisol levels, then their body doesn't just have the capacity to handle the lack of eating, basically, that people are going or putting themselves through.
And they get hangry.
Yeah. And that's the thing, good. Is that, you know, and I tell people all the time, like I've done, you know, the first time I found out intermittent fasting was 2010 from a colleague of mine, John Berardi. Mm-hmm. And I've been experimenting since then. And so you do have to be very, very careful, because basically if you're going to do intermittent fasting and you want to know, okay, am I okay with it or not? The one telltale sign is that if you haven't eaten from, you know, 10 o'clock the night before till 12 or 1 the next day, pretty much you should just feel hungry, and that's about it. And once you eat, you shouldn't feel hungry. But if you feel like your mood is all over the place, you feel hangry, you're starting to feel depressive thoughts, you're getting anxiety, that's a sign that your body can't handle it.
Right.
And so you definitely want to think twice about doing IF.
Yeah. When I tried it, I experienced all of that and I got really bloated, which was interesting because I wasn't eating.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was probably the added stress.
Yep. Absolutely.
So another question that I get all the time, as I'm sure you do as well, is around supplementation. It seems like there are so many in the market now that are promised to do all these things, and how effective can they be? When are they appropriate? How much of it is supplementation? How much is lifestyle? What are your thoughts around that?
Right. Yeah, in my, obviously the topic of the book, Whole in One Nutrition, the book I wrote this past, or 2018.
Which is amazing, and everybody should get.
Thank you.
If they're not golfers.
that's the thing, is obviously a lot of people have asked me, well, is this going to help me? And I said, well, the general principles, well, it will help you. And the Whole in One nutrition pyramid is the bottom tier is hydration, middle tier is whole food, and then the top tier is supplementation. So I really wanted to really keep it simple.
Right.
And so, you know, the supplements were only going to be as good as your foundation. So obviously your foundation is going to be hydration first, And then the middle tier is going to be whole foods. And then the top tier is going to be supplementation. So in very rare cases, I may go the other way around and maybe use more supplements sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's why I say you got to make sure you're drinking half your body mass of the day first, and then the middle tier, really try to make sure you get whole food supplements as much as you can first. And then at the very top tier, then use the appropriate supplements. And for me, I think appropriate supplements would be depending on what your goals are, or maybe some of your health issues. Like, for example, if someone's constipated all the time, then I'm going to usually look at one, first water, make sure that's in there. Make sure they're having enough probably fiber in the form of vegetables from their whole food perspective. And then the top tier supplementation, then I'm going to be starting to look at, hey, you know, you have a lot of stress in your life. Every time you get stressed, you get depleted in magnesium. So we're going to start to do a magnesium load test with you. And, that's where we'd kind of go with someone with constipation. Uh-huh. And to do use that. And if that doesn't work, then I'll start to look at, okay, we may need to use some other herbs and things like that to help move the bowels. Yeah, when we're talking about supplementation in regards to your gut health and the GI tract, I think one of the biggest myths is probiotics. Like, if you have gut health issues, probiotics, use probiotics. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a toss-up. It's almost 50-50, I find. Some people is like, oh my gosh, that made a world of difference. In the context of, let's say, someone who has a lot of bloating, and it could be from bacteria, SIBO, or it could be, well, let's just keep it in context of SIBO, so bacterial overgrowth. Then sometimes when you add probiotics into the mix, that's like adding gasoline to the fire.
Right.
And people go, oh my gosh, my bloating's worse. I can't believe this. Like, probiotics are supposed to help me. So
yeah, that happened to me actually last winter, remember?
Right. Yeah. So that's why we have to be careful of that. And so, and the reason why I say it's complicated is just from experience, because, I run tons of stool tests on clients. And so it's not just one thing that comes back, as an overgrowth. Sometimes it's three bacteria, parasite, and candida. And you're going, right, holy cow, like, okay, so we're going to have to deal with this and do a detox. If it's just yeast or something, overgrowth, then it's a pretty simple thing to deal with. Mm-hmm. But that's where it can be somewhat complicated. So, for example, let's say if it was just yeast and, nothing else, then you could probably use a probiotic and be probably in a safe place and to do a, digestive detox. Mm-hmm. But if someone has, multiple bacterial overgrowth, then you have to be careful with the probiotic.
So the bottom line is it's different for everybody, and we should all assess individually what's going on in our own bodies.
Like, I just even recommend, just like you would go to the doctor for blood work once a year, I think people should get, a stool test once a year.
Right.
If you travel and you eat out, people eat tons of sushi all the time. And I got to tell you, the first time I learned about all this functional medicine stuff with parasites and everything else, I mean, the naturopathic doctor was like, 100% of sushi has parasites.
Wow. Yes. I didn't know that until a couple months ago when I started having some unpleasant digestive issues, and I consulted with you about it, and turns out, and I don't eat sushi very much anymore. I used to, but I had had sushi like 2 weeks before, and you put me on a regimen and I got better after a couple of weeks. But
yeah, so it's a tough one, like with raw food, and then, sushi, sashimi is typically looked at as the healthy type of food, right?
Right.
And it's raw and everything like that. But I would err on the side of caution, and I still have it every once in a while, but I, like the trend these days are poke bowls, right? So everybody's eating poke.
Yes.
But I stray away from that, because I, for maybe a month, I ate sushi every single weekend. And then sure enough, end of summertime, I'm like, why in the hell am I so bloated? I'm like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I looked like I was like 4 months pregnant, like after eating. I'm like, this is not normal. Of course, right. I do a stool test, and then I got a parasite. So
even though you're
I'm not immune to it at all, for sure. Like I'm definitely having things going on. So it's just sometimes it happens. So yeah, I mean it's good if you get tested. Yeah, you got to collect your poop and that kind of stuff, but it just takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. Like you can try it. So, you know, I'm sure 50% of the people that are listening, they're probably, well, I'm going to use a probiotic, and 50% right. you might get better and the other 50 might not, or you might get worse.
Obviously the testing process is not the greatest. And I think people are hesitant to spend money on testing and might see all of this as kind of frivolous. And yes, it's a luxury to be able to afford this stuff. But the alternative, at least in my experience, was spending money on supplements aimlessly, kind of like you were saying before, just guessing, throwing things at it, hoping something would stick, and spending money on doctors and different specialists and never getting to the root cause, which all of that in total far surpassed what at least I have spent so far on some lab tests and some supplements.
Yeah. And that reminds me. So I know we talked about, okay, well, you know, talking about digestion and the gut and where, you know, if you have issues, what's actually one thing you could really do. And I talked about the whole stress thing, and it makes me think actually one thing that you can do this, the day that you're listening to this podcast is be mindful when you eat. So what I mean by that is I think, you know, there's another way of saying is eat in peace, right? Like mm-hmm. one of the things that I found that's very common in, you know, people that are, you know, it doesn't matter whether they're a CEO, whether they're just an entrepreneur or whatever they're doing, is that people are not taking a break to eat their food. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm guilty of this. Like I like to read or, you know, watch something educational or something like that. But we have to realize is that the eyes, whenever you're reading or answering email or whichever, you're not paying attention to your food, right? So what ends up happening is you don't chew your food enough. So if you don't chew your food enough, well, that's the process of digestion right there, is chewing your food, or even thinking about your food is the start of the digestive process. So you have to make sure you chew your food. And the only way to do that is be conscious, be mindful when you're eating. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it is, you know, if you're like the avid reader or, you know, you're looking on the internet or whatever, the vision takes a lot of energy. And so what ends up happening is a lot of the blood is diverted from your digestive tract into your eyes. And so that's why it's really important that you, like, you literally want to try to just sit there and, you know, enjoy a meal with your loved one and your family. Like we try to do family dinner every single night so we can catch up, talk, joke around, whatever. And so I think that's really, really important. So I think that's something that all the listeners can do right away. And, you know, there's a, you know, I forgot what I was going to say, but focusing on, you know, try eating without your phone and try to eat a meal in 20 minutes time. Cause I'm a really fast eater. So
me too.
I have to really, yeah, to be really, you know, cognizant of, okay, like chew my food and do that. And the other thing you might want to try to do is try to eat a meal without drinking water.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. Because a lot of people think, okay, I'm going to eat this meal and then I'm going to drink a ton of water to help my body digest it. But really, doesn't it kind of break down the hydrochloric acid?
Yeah, so it's a possibility that could do it. But the other reason why I say that is because I'm really weird. Like my wife thinks I'm so weird, but sometimes we, you know, go on date night and then I'll be watching people as they eat because I'm really curious to see, okay, they're going to take a huge bite of that steak or that whatever meat and they chew maybe 6, 7, 8 times and then they swallow.
Right.
And they're already putting food in their mouth again. And so what I notice is that people will drink water excessively because they're pushing the food down their esophagus.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I'm saying is that if you tend to be that person that drinks a lot of water during a meal, try not drinking water during a meal, and then you'll go, oh my God, like my food's getting stuck in my throat. Like I definitely need to chew my food more. So
interesting.
Yeah, that's something that you can kind of try and experiment with.
Well, I was gonna ask you as our closing question, what is one aspect of our lifestyle that's really critical for our overall well-being that people overlook, but maybe that's kind of your tip, is being mindful when we're eating, or I don't know if you have anything else you want to add.
Yeah, I would say, yes, being very, mindful of, when you're eating, that would be, basically I think the number one thing that we can do, like an action item to take away right away. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, in the grand scheme of thing, I think, and more research is coming out is, about sleep. So, you know, with sleep, you want to make sure you're getting enough sleep over, you know, a week period of time. Obviously, you know, take about 8 hours of sleep a night, because just a simple study that they did with people is that just for 3 weeks, they deprived them of sleep. So what they did was, like, they have a baseline 3 week period where they would basically make these people sleep 8 hours a night. So they're getting plenty enough sleep, eight mm-hmm. to 9 hours a night. And then for 3 weeks, they deprive them of sleep about 5.5 hours a night, which isn't too far off the map in terms of for people in terms of their sleep pattern. Sometimes, you know, they're not sleeping that much. And what they showed in just 3 weeks, they were all pre-diabetic. I mean, you're going, what? Like, that's pre-diabetic?
Incredible.
Like, and their blood work was normal before that. So I would say that would be one of the big things is, you know, people typically think of, oh, you sleep too much, you know, you're lazy, but
right.
Really in the context of a lot of the different health issues and healing your gut and healing your hormones, sleep is that overlooked factor in regards to getting yourself healthy.
And quality sleep, right? Not taking Nambien and passing out.
Exactly. And obviously, you know, that's, you know, yeah, that can be part of the factor involved in that, and you've got to do some investigative work in terms of why you need to do that. But yeah, if there's issues with sleep, then that definitely needs to be worked on and then to figure out why you can't sleep.
Yep. I think that's such a hard one, especially now because everybody is so busy and go, go, go. And
yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for joining me. Hopefully I'll have you on again. So be on standby.
Definitely. We only kind of hit the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, other things you can do, or, you know, we need to talk about and answer some other questions, but thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you, listener, for tuning in and bearing with me as I find my footing here in this podcasting world. Again, apologies for the audio. I have it figured out now, but my first few interviews are of different qualities because I was playing around with different software and microphones and all of that good stuff that I know nothing about. So it's a learning curve. But anyway, I hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and I will talk to you next week.